My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary for his reproof. For the Lord reproves him whom he loves, as a father the son in whom he delights. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the deeps broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew.
Well, today we carry on in our reflections on the book of Proverbs. And I get that Proverbs can be a bit of a challenge. I mean, it is wisdom that goes back a long time, so we're thinking David was 1,000 years before Christ. Solomon follows him, so around 1,000 years before Christ. So here we are, 3,000 years later, reading this tradition, originally oral tradition. No scriptures to read, just what was passed on. And then later, things are written. In fact, it's interesting, it's not till around 1100 AD, after Christ, that the first written Hebrew Bible is found, collected, collated together. So that's how long it took for these oral traditions to be written down. They were scrolls, but they weren't all put together. So oral traditions that ultimately become written down, and we get the privilege then of looking at that. So it's something that we shouldn't really take for granted. We're looking at this word wisdom. That's the Hebrew word, or one of the words for wisdom that we're looking at, that is used in our text. And the text, depending on what translation you're reading, will say my son, but the word actually is meant my son, my daughter, my youth. It is parent speaking or teacher speaking. So in other cultures, one would refer to a son or a daughter, but it's not necessarily their son or daughter. It's a language of respect. And so it isn't just father or mother to son, but it is a teacher reaching out and teaching wisdom. So that's kind of what we're to keep in mind as we go. So the kerygma, which is kind of, it's a Greek word for the main idea, the kerygma, the main idea of Jesus Christ, or we might call it the kerygma or the gospel of the book of Proverbs, is the word life. So the book of Proverbs is written so that you and I, we might flourish in life. That it's written for everybody, that we will live in an abounding life, a wonderful life, a flourishing life. That's the idea. And so this journey that we experience to know life takes us through all the seasons of faith. The piece we have on the baptistry there is a tree. And the tree, if you note, is presented in the different seasons. And so far to the left, it's the same tree, but here we have the winter season. And then here we have the spring season. And here we have the summer season, and here we have the fall season. So the four seasons we go through chronologically. Here in the northern climates, northern hemisphere, we begin our year with winter, right? But if you were in Bolivia, you would not begin with winter, you would begin with summer. And so how do the seasons progress? But then interiorly, how do they progress? So here we are, the end of summer, going into the fall season. So chronologically, through the year, we're moving into the fall. Kind of a warm, gentle season, colorful, energizing. But it's the temperatures are coming down. It's not the heat of the summer. We're moving into the fall. But interiorly, you may not feel like you're in the fall. You may be sitting here and you are really feeling more winter. Your spirit is not necessarily warm. You may feel distance from God. You may feel that I'm not hearing his voice. So it may be a winter season interiorly that you're experiencing. Because we all go through the four seasons of faith. And at times, over a life, we go through these winter, spring, summer, fall seasons might fit. But in the moment, our temperature with God can be very different. So some here may feel the joy of summer, and others here may feel the coolness of winter. So how do we experience life in the midst of all that? And I'd say here that wisdom is not so much content, but it's an attitude. It's the attitude that we bring to our relationship with God, and it's captured in the phrase that we've been noting, the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, the reverence of the Lord. Not being scared of God, that's not the idea, but of reverence, love, commitment to God, that is all wrapped up in the fear of the Lord. So through these weeks, we're considering this Old Testament language. We're thinking of what does the fear of the Lord mean for you and for me? How does that speak to us, all right? So two bits. We're looking at Proverbs 3, 1 to 20, divides more or less in half, and we're going to call it going to the school of wisdom in our lives. And we'll note, again, if you have the Bible, you might look at it, verses 1 to 12, it falls into six couplets, verses 1, 2, number 1, then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, six couplets. And there's a principle laid out in the first part of it, and then there is a motivation for following it. That's how it works, a principle and then a motivation. This is the school of wisdom. So you can imagine a teacher teaching their students. Remember when I was teaching at the seminary in India, in Kakinada, smaller city, maybe only 500,000 people, Baptist seminary there. But it was kind of interesting because when you come into the class, all the students stand up. Well, they don't do that at Tyndale, right? Nobody stands up for you. But there, they all stand up, recognize you as the teacher, and then they sit down and you begin, right? And oftentimes, when you're speaking, you're actually on a raised platform and you're cross-legged and you're teaching. That's the method they're using. Interesting. So you can imagine the teacher to these students presenting what that person is thinking are wise ideas to live your life by. Okay, so the first one, do not forget my teaching. That's what the teacher's saying. Don't forget. So why say that? Don't forget. Well, it was the same then and it is now because we do forget. We get distracted, we move on. But the idea here is, one is to hold on to this wisdom throughout your life. Don't forget it. Stay true to it. Through all the different seasons of faith, hold on. Meister Eckhart used to talk about, the first half in terms of our faith, the first half is easy. Second half is a lot harder. So many people begin, but they don't finish. So we're invited to not only begin, but to finish, not to forget. My child, it writes in the NRSV, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. Your heart stands for your mind, your will, your connection with God. That heart, may these words be written on the tablet of your heart so that you won't forget. And then the promise is, for length of days and years of life and abundant welfare they will give you. So this is not a promise. It's not saying it definitely will happen, but generally, the writer is saying it will happen. If you stay true to God's word and you hear it and you let it resonate in your heart, the writer is saying, generally, you are going to have length of days and years of life and abundant welfare they will give you. Now, we might argue with that. We might say, well, I know all kinds of people, that's not the case. But the text here is talking about someone who is looking to the Lord, living in that kind of dynamic, and there is the promise of longer life, or the encouragement that that might be the case. So I don't know about you, do you want to live a long life? I mean, is that a good thing for you? I'm watching a program right now, and it's kind of a heavy, well, I won't even say what it is. Beth is looking at me kind of shocked. I won't say it. But the girl, the woman, the lead is asked, she committed a crime, she's now in jail or going to be in jail. And the detective is figuring out a way that she wasn't in her right mind when this happened. You have a way out. And her comment was, well, who wants a way out? She's ready to be sentenced and to die. Who wants it? I don't want it. So in her case, she didn't want it. But in our case, well, if you want to live a long life, then keep looking to God, keep trusting in God, and then see where that takes you. Not necessarily a given, but that's the encouragement. So will we hear that? Don't forget, because we do forget. I think in our day and age, it's far more easy to forget than when Solomon wrote this down. 3,000 years ago, there weren't nearly as many distractions. You lived in a rural community. You were surrounded by your family, your friends. You lived in a small village, maybe 200 people. That's your life. It's an agrarian world. Sun comes up, the sun goes down. That's your schedule you're following. No iPhones, no tablets, none of that kind of stuff. I think it was easier to stay tuned into the Lord way back then than it is now. I think we have a much harder time. I think it is very, very easy to forget. Because as soon as you leave this place, you're going to be bombarded with all kinds of things. So I think this reference is more needed than ever. Do not forget. Hold on to what is true, what is real. Because you're going to be, and I'm going to be, distracted with all kinds of things. Do not forget my teaching, number one. Secondly, allow love and faithfulness to guide you. Those are two key words. In the NRSV, it says loyalty. Allow loyalty and faithfulness. The Hebrew words, as I've noted, are that word chesed, which is God's steadfast love, or our love, a key biblical word. And then the next one, faithfulness, is also key, emet. So the writer is saying these pillars from God, his steadfast love and his faithfulness to you, the God of the universe loves you with a steadfast love and with a dynamic faithfulness. This is not a New Year's resolution that God says, yeah, I'm with you, and then a few hours later forgets. He is committed to you and to me. Chesed and emet, steadfast love and faithfulness. Now the writer is saying, you hold on to those things. You hold on to what God has for you. You hold on to that. And then what is the promise? You will find favor with God and people. And again, we can argue that, yes or no. But the actual principle, he's encouraging us to hold on. I mean, what do you hold on to? In the midst of your life and all the busyness with your family and all, you know, whatever, birthday parties, it goes on and on and on. Kids, grandkids, meetings you go to, classes you got to teach, sports that you're involved in, whatever it might be. What are you holding on to? Well, maybe younger people, you typically hold on to your parents. You're holding on to them, man. That's what you hold on to. Well, as you get older, what are you holding on to? If you're younger, maybe there aren't parents there. What do you hold on to? What do I hold on to in life? Maybe we hold on to our work. God, yes, that's what. And specifically, the writer is saying his love and his faithfulness. I think that's good teaching. We need to hold on to something. What keeps you centered throughout the whole week? We can be, you know, like a mouse on a wheel, just spinning, 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 spinning. What do we hold on to? The writer says, steadfast love, faithfulness, hold on to that. Maybe we give that a thought. Thirdly, trust in, I should have here, Yahweh. The name is not God, Elohim, it's Yahweh. The Lord. In the English translations, it goes Lord. Trust in the Lord. Have faith and reliance on Him. These are famous verses. A lot of people, we've memorized these, right? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not rely or lean on your own insight. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will make straight your paths. So that's a little bit of memory verse you may have done. It comes here from Proverbs 3. Build your relationship with the Lord. Trust in Him, the writer is saying. This is absolutely pivotal, right? This is faith. What do we hold on to? When I watch The Chosen, I'm struck by the film series when the disciples are shown getting up. They're on their bed and they move around, right? They swing their legs over. And immediately they cite some verses. There's a prayer. There's a prayer they engage with immediately. And then before every meal, there is a prayer. In the evening, another prayer. There's this constant dynamic of staying tuned into Yahweh, the Lord. And again, in our distraction, we may well not be doing that. Trust in the Lord, number three. And what? God will make your path straight. You will have less obstacles in life. Why? Well, partly it's because you're following what He wants you to do. A lot of our screw-ups are because we don't follow what the Lord wants us to do, and then we get into challenging situations. Follow the Lord, and your paths will be straighter and straighter and straighter. That's the advice. Number four, fear the Lord. Number seven and eight. That is, we've been saying, live in the awe of God and the intimacy of God. That's what is defined as the fear of the Lord. Do not be wise in your own eyes, but fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Note, here we go, it will be a healing for your flesh and a refreshment for your body. So in our day and age today, we spend billions and billions of dollars, right, on caring for our bodies. We're always looking for new things, going to caregivers, whatever it might be. We want our body to be in good shape through all the seasons of life. And the writer is saying here that if you fear the Lord and live in a relationship with Him, it will even be good for your body. Because if you turn away from Him, chances are you're going to mess your body up. You can think about that. Live in humility, not pride. When I say there, give God a chance, I'm saying, will we listen to His voice? Will we really listen for His voice? Hear what He's got to say for us. Or do we figure we've already got it all determined, all figured out? We know the answer already, so why even ask? Live in fear of the Lord. Number five. Honor God with your wealth. This is an agrarian society, right? What was wealth? Well, wealth was originally your crops. So when you have your harvest, your crops, in the day you were to bring the first fruits of that to the temple. Why? Because the priests lived on the crops you brought. The whole Levitical group depended on that. If you don't bring your crops in, your first fruits, then they don't have anything to eat. So the invitation is, okay, honor the Lord with your first fruits. So I'm suggesting is to know God in our financial ways. We talked a few weeks ago about Toffler's the modular person, that we divide our lives into sections, and you know, we see God here, but all the other parts we don't necessarily think in terms of God. The writer is saying here to know God in our financial ways. So will we bring God into our financial life? Not to give into the face of material pressures. And I have it here, a paradoxical truth. The truth is, the paradox here is if you give your first fruits to the Lord, your barns will be full and your vineyards will do well. If you give, more will even come back to you. There's this principle. We can say, well, I don't really believe that, or I don't trust in that. Therefore, I won't give. And the writer is saying, well, you may not give, but on the long run, you're going to have less. You will do better if you share, if you give your resources away, a part of them. If you do that, you're going to be better off than ever. That's what this principle is saying. Whether we believe that or not. I was down in Halifax recently. I saw my brother. Don't get to spend significant time with him, so I had a few days with Earl. And so I was asking him, because when I came over from Ireland, I was just a baby. I'm just 6 months old, right? So I don't remember anything from Ireland. Earl was 4 years old. So I said, brother, do you have any memories of actually Ireland? Do you have any memories? And he says, yeah, I have one. He had a few. We talked about them. But he had one that kind of jumped out to me. And he said, Mother, we used to call Mom Mother for whatever reason. It was Dad and Mother. What's all that about, right? I don't know. When I was little, it was Mommy. It was Mom. As I got older, it was Mother. I don't know. Anyway, Earl says, well, you know what? Mom took me aside one day, and she's going to go over the financial arrangement of the household. So she's doing this with Earl. I never got this lesson. So if you think I'm screwed up with money, you can blame it on my mother, because I never got the lesson, all right? Anyway, the lesson was, here's my money. The first bit of my money, 10% goes to the Lord. That's to the Lord. That's what she said. To the Lord. She's talking to Earl, my brother, who's 4 years old. This is to the Lord. And then this is what I'm going to say. And this is to pay the rent of the house, right? So she goes with all the others. But I was struck by it. Earl was struck by it. The first bit is to the Lord. So my daughters are here. There you go. That's what your grandmother is saying. First bit to the Lord, all right? But I mean, what does that say? Well, she recognized in her Irish way that, you know, and beyond, that her financial life mattered to the Lord. And she was going to live her life that way. My parents didn't have a ton, especially when they came over from Ireland. They did not have a lot by any means. So this was a step of faith. We could think, well, you know, one could argue, Mom, you didn't hardly have anything. It took you years to get a house. Why not just hold on to that? Then you would have got the house a lot earlier. My mother would not have agreed. So there is a fifth principle there. Honor God with your wealth. Allow God into your financial ways. And finally, there is this issue of not despising the Lord due to hardship. And the reference here is, my child, do not despise the Lord's discipline. They're looking at the hardships of life, and they're referencing it as the Lord's discipline. We may not use that language today. Or be weary of his reproof. But the Lord reproves the one he loves as the father, the mother, the son in whom they delight. So what do we do with hardships? Do the hardships make us angry with God? Do they make us bitter with God? Does it make us want to forget God? Does it create distance from God? What do we do? Because we all experience it, right? We all experience different discipline, if we call it that, suffering, certainly, hardship. Some of you are right in it right now. You're in it right now. So what do you do with that pain? It could be physical pain, mental pain, emotional pain, whatever. How do you do, and what do you do with that? One writer says this, whatever hardship comes, place yourself in the hand of God in it. Whatever hardship comes, place yourself in the hand of God in it. Remember reading Nouwen, and Nouwen was talking to an athlete, and the athlete had a severe injury, and that was the end of his career as an athlete. It was the end. And the reference is, okay, well now, maybe God's going to give you a new vocation. What is the new vocation? If you place yourself in the hand of God, what's the new thing here? It's a bummer that your career has ended here, right? But life's not over. What's the new vocation? So the challenge is, in the midst of all the suffering, what is God saying to us in the midst of that? And, you know, we can be so angry and so uptight. We, you know, that, like, man, that kind of idea, that statement just is a complete turnoff, right? We don't even want to hear it. But it's one way of thinking about hardship. So that's the school. Then a shorter bit here, then what does that mean? What is the blessings? In verses 13 through 16, really verse 17, is saying that you will be blessed. Happy are those who find wisdom. No, verse 13. Happy are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding. For her income is better than silver and her revenue better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. That word is shalom. Happy. So, we all want to be happy. We want to live a happy life. The writer is saying, well, you seek after wisdom, and the chances are you're going to enjoy happiness. Because you will see life in a different way. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. Shalom. So if you're going after all kinds of other things, in our neighborhood, there's lots of homes that are being redone, and people are moving from smaller homes, and they're building them up into bigger and bigger homes. So that might be a smart thing to do. Maybe it's a good choice real estate-wise, but that's what they're doing. So it depends what you're looking at. Or you're going after a lot of silver and gold, whatever you're going. But that doesn't necessarily mean happiness. So, happiness. Remember the story of Solomon, 1 Kings 3. Solomon is offered whatever you want. Whatever you want, God is saying, I'll give it to you. And Solomon's point at that point in his life was, I want wisdom. So how do we want wisdom? Happy are those. Okay, number one. Secondly, wisdom is the tree of life. That's an interesting verse, verse 18. She, that is wisdom, is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. Where does tree of life come from? You remember the Genesis story, right? That's where it first comes up, in the Garden of Eden. This is an image from the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve are in a garden, and there is a tree of life. God says, if you eat of that tree, you will have eternal life. You will have life. There's also a tree of good and evil. Those are the true trees that are mentioned. Tree of good and evil, tree of life. The invitation there is don't eat either of them. You can eat all the other trees, but don't eat of those for whatever reason. Don't eat those. There are other references of tree of life, and it there's the spark here of life, as we've noted. They're of hope, of even joy. Rejoice in everything, Paul says. Tree of Life is about life, it's about hope, it's about joy. Talking to my brother again, and he made a good point to me. He said, you know, Alan, when I look at Christians around in my church, you know what I see? I see a lack of joy. I don't see Christians full of joy. Where's the joy? I thought, you know, that's not a bad statement. If we are connected to the tree of life, and ultimately the tree of life is Jesus, and we have eternal life, and we have crazy hope, then maybe that should just touch our lives with a little bit more of joy. So if we don't have joy, then what are we thinking about? What's replacing that joy? Because if I don't have it, I'm not thinking about the tree of life and all of that imagery, then I'm thinking about something else. I say that for all of us, myself included. There should be more joy, right? If we're not experiencing that, then we got to ask ourselves, why not? We may say, well, maybe in heaven I'll experience some joy, but not till then. But that's not the way it's presented. So the tree of life is an imagery of hope, of joy. That's the second benefit. And then finally, that we are invited to live in tune with the Creator. The Lord, by wisdom, founded the earth. By understanding, he established the heavens. It's interesting, by understanding, that word in Spanish is inteligencia, intelligence. By intelligence, he established the heavens. So the image is, we build a house, right? I mentioned neighbors who are building a house. Well, God builds the entire cosmos. And the same kind of understanding that it takes us to build a house, we're going to build a new building, new church, God's will, new building. Architects, engineers are all involved, the various levels. This is what goes into it. Well, the image is God's building a cosmos. And it's not just, boom, there's a cosmos. It's God builds it. All his intelligence, all his reflection, to put all of these layers together throughout the entire universe. God is building a cosmos for you and for me, just as we might build a house. God is creator, God who is sustainer. This is God's intelligence. This is God for you, for me, his love for us, that we even exist. We live in a universe where you and I exist, and that life is a gift. And so we are invited to live it wisely. That's what he's saying, verses 18 and 19. By his knowledge, the deep broke open and the clouds dropped the dew. I note that because down in Prince Edward County, where we are in the summer, there's actually not a lot of rain. It's a very dry part. You'd think surrounded by water in the lake, there'd be lots of rain. It's not. But when I get up in the morning and I go outside, my feet are always getting wet. As soon as I get up early, I go outside, and there's moisture on the grass. That's the dew. And that was in God's plan from the very beginning. In Palestine, there is not a lot of rain. But you could count on that little bit of moisture in the morning. That's dew. That's a gift. That's part of God building a universe. We can take it for granted and think, well, that means nothing. Well, that means something to the fields. They get a little shot of moisture every morning. That helps. So we conclude with what? Build your house in wisdom. God builds a cosmos. You and I are building a house. If you're younger here, how are you building your house? You're going to go to university. What are you going to take? How are you going to build your house? What's your job? How are you going to build your house, your life? This is the invitation, and Proverbs is wisdom to help us do that right. We read all kinds of textbooks. Why not read God's textbook? Build your house in wisdom. God gives wisdom, but we have to struggle to attain it. It doesn't just happen. You have to attain it. I have to attain it. Thirdly, wisdom has great rewards. Better than wealth, the writer is saying. Leads to life and wholeness and joy. It leads to a life of integration rather than disintegration. A life that connects together. Wisdom. So I pray that we might be open, we might be receptive, that we might learn and grow together. God's given us some tools. God's given us some scrolls to work with. May we hear them, receive them. In Jesus' name, amen.